So welcome to the show, Brian. Thanks for joining us. I know you are quite invested in this industry. We talked a lot in the past already about the impact and everything of AI, and that's a project that you're quite how would I say it, passionate about. So just maybe give us a little bit of a background into some of the data you're gathering, some of the things you're hearing, because really the hope for today's conversation is, what is this AI thing? What should I be worried about? Where can I use it? And where do I start? And those are four really, really big questions, but I'm hoping we can kind of meander through those today. So
Sure,
what do you
sure.
see when it comes to AI?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the podcast today. I really do appreciate that. I think for so long, as we talk to our audience, the big question has been, and our audience of primarily floriculture greenhouse operations, is, we've become so good as an industry at using a lot of tools out there to collect data on all stages of plant production. The big question has been, okay, what can we do with that data then? How can we make informed decisions for our company based on that data we're collecting? That's the big concern I think we've been hearing at, from the growers that we talk to in this industry for quite a long time. One of the things that we do is we do a survey every year of actually I'll take a step back. We do two surveys every year, one for our top 100 audience and one that's state of the industry, and it's more focused on the entire audience. That's a survey that's still ongoing right now, and we are starting to ask more questions this year of our entire audience about AI. How do they define it? Are they using it? What does it mean? And what could it mean for their company? Specifically, when we poll our top 100 audience, and these are the growers that make up the largest volume in the industry based on controlled environment square footage of production. We started asking a couple of years ago, are you using AI in your greenhouses? The numbers are still pretty low. I mean, it's in the single digits where somebody outright says yes, but one of the options they can choose from is, no, I'm not, but I would consider using it. That number seems to be getting larger every year. This past year, I think it was about 82% of growers are saying that. So I think what it's showing us is there's a collective interest in the use of AI in the greenhouse. It's just a matter of how do I go about doing so. I think the other interesting thing, there's another question we ask in this survey, is where are you planning to invest in the coming year? And what we saw over the past couple of years is, as the industry started coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we saw this huge wave of plant consumers, and the question for a while was, A, are we going to be able to keep those consumers who joined us during the pandemic? And then also, how are supply chain issues going to affect what we're doing as an industry? I think as those started to play out, we saw a lot of growers expand in size. In our surveys, we were showing, growers adding hundreds upon thousands of square footage of production space. That was in the past couple of years. Now I think we're starting to see growers getting past that point of expanding in size. And now it's all about, how am I going to make my operation more efficient, whether it's through automation or whether it's through some of these emerging technologies like AI. We asked the question again, where are you investing? Software investments seem to be on the rise, and emerging technology is also something we're seeing kind of move up from year to year. So I think there's a definite interest in what our audience is doing in terms of, they want to look at AI as something that is viable for their operation. Again, I think the big question is, how are we going to get to that point where it can be something of service to us?
So maybe just as you mentioned, a couple things there to tie into those. First and foremost is, what are you defining as AI? And I know maybe you say, well, I don't, there's a big definition out there. Maybe as a tech person, I may have a more nuanced definition of what AI is exactly. I know I've talked to a few people working on drones, and one in particular said 90% of the drone platform we deliver is non-AI. It's just machine learning. It's algorithms. It's so when we say AI, it seems to be this really big, big scope. What can somebody think of when we say the words AI? What should we be thinking of? Because is interpolating pictures AI? Is automation, how much of that is actually AI? Or does it even matter if we have a succinct definition?
I think your last point there is most accurate. I don't know if it really matters in this injury because I don't think, honestly, that we'll be able to get to a point where we can definitively define what AI is. I think the same thing comes up when you talk about automation. The size of the operation, the scales of the operation is going to dictate what automation really means. I think when you boil it down, it's really data-driven decision-making and, you know, how you can, again, make best use of all the data that you're collecting to make decisions, whether it's in the greenhouse or whether it's out of the greenhouse. I think, you know, some of the growers that we talk to, it's, you know, it within the greenhouse, it's measuring plant height. It's using all the tools you have to measure plant data, but it also applies in the office, I think. You know, we hear, and again, this kind of goes to how somebody would define AI, something as you would think is as simple as developing like an employee handbook, for example. I think the process of using some of the tools that are out there to do that, I think a lot of growers still define that as AI. I don't know if that's, you know, in my mind, really accurate for what AI can be, but that's, again, it kind of goes to how, you know, various parts of this industry will ultimately define AI in different ways.
Yeah, because a lot of, and just to dive into that a little bit more and then we'll pull back out of it, but a lot of the things that we are delivering as AI today have been around before ChatGPT actually came on and popularized the term AI. Because there's a lot of data-driven growing that is algorithmic, and those algorithms were created by human beings based on hordes of data and based on machine learning and all of those kind of things. So in and of themselves, a true AI scientist would probably say, yeah, that's not AI. But for the sake of today's conversation, I think we're lumping that all together and saying if it's data-driven, if it's somewhat automated, if there is an agentic, like an agent-type interface, so we can almost think of ChatGPT, for example, as it's just this really big agent that can help you get tasks done, i.e. create an employee handbook. You could have an agent that helps you create policies and all of those things. And all of those items together lump in as what we're calling AI today, I guess.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think one of the things this industry is really starting to monitor is, you know, a few years back, as you saw the development of new tools that are out there, I think a lot of it was initially focused on some of the more expanding segments of this market. For example, controlled environment agriculture, you saw more directly, I think, a lot of the applicability between the technology and the operation. I think what's happening now is, you know, growers in our market, again, the ornamental, the floriculture growers are really trying to get a sense of, okay, so what does this mean for me? How can I take that same type of technology and apply it to what I'm doing on the ornamental side of production? I think you see a lot more of those examples from that segment coming into fruition to this market now.
Yeah, because definitely another point that really resonated with me, because I'm in the software industry myself, and I see and I'm interfacing with this on a daily basis, is we meet with growers that have, you know, reams of Excel data sheets that are full of data, either manually collected or downloaded from whatever software that may be out there collecting data. And some of them are just, what do I do with this data? How do I create action in this data other than a human being perusing it and saying, okay, well, this makes sense. So that's lining up. We've often looked at data almost like a financial statement. It's just proving what we already know. That's what a good financial statement should do in your business is, if there's surprises in your income statement, well, you probably don't really have your finger on the pulse of the business every day. So if we look at data as that, it's never going to get more than what it is today. So how is AI going to help make that data come alive? Like, are you seeing some of that already? Or because you're definitely hearing that they would like to take these reams of data and do something with it. So how is AI going to help us there?
I think it's a slow process right now, I have to be honest. I think part of it, and you alluded to a second ago, when you talk about how you're collecting information, if you're doing it manually today, some of it, I think, is a generational thing. You know, we focus a lot on the future of this industry, from everything from the technology innovation to the actual people who are going to be leading the industry forward. I think as the next generation of ownership comes into play and they're using tools that, you know, the generations before them didn't dream that they'd be able to use in their operation. And I think they're more willing to dig into that more. So I think as the next generation starts to use some of those tools that are available, so not having to do everything manually, I think that's where you're going to start to see the growth. But I do think it's kind of a slow process right now. I think that there's a lot of this industry is still in the, okay, you know, how can I start the process of translating this data into something that we can actually make a decision from? So it's the start of a beginning, I think, right now.
Yeah. So the advice wouldn't be to stop collecting the data, because there is a time coming where we're going to be able to utilize all that data.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely don't stop. Keep doing what you're doing. Look for new ways to collect that information. And then, you know, the sky's the limit from there, I think.
Because AI, and maybe that's kind of where the question came from, AI in itself still needs to rely on a set of data, just like we do. Our knowledge and our wisdom and all that stuff still at its core level comes from data. We interpret that data, and we make assumptions and evaluations, and then we do things which creates more data, and we say, oh, did that work or did it not? So it's still a very scientific process that even AI doesn't move away from. So it's not like suddenly the entire world shifts. It's just what we're doing with it is going to shift.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I saw some of that bear out in some of the conversations that I was involved in or simply watched to cultivate this past year. This was the first year I recall where there was a big focus on the educational side on AI and what it could mean. One of the panels that really stood out to me was a group of growers who came together, and this was actually the second year that they were together. And so last year they talked about just in general, what is AI? This year they moved the conversation ahead to look at how can we start to use it to, you know, better improve what we're doing in our businesses? What are some of the myths in AI versus what are some of the realities are? And I think that there's becoming more of a focus on the educational side right now.
And were you part of the conversation, or did you anything you want to share of where, like, what are the growers using AI for today?
I think right now it's, you know, as they're trying to figure out, okay, you know, how are nutrient levels? How can we manage light levels? How can we interconnect some of the technology that we're using right now so that we're not, you know, collecting information here and collecting information here and they don't intersect at all? I think that's where growers are starting to look at combining and integrating some of that technology together. I think when you extend it from when a plant is ready to be shipped and taking it through the shipping process, I think growers are starting to look at that as well. And how can we best automate our shipping processes using tools like AI to, you know, get a product into the retailer or the consumer's hands as quick and efficiently as possible.
So both from a, how can I streamline my data collection and make it more efficient coming rather than disparate sources? That's one way. And another way is, how do I take my current processes and automate them or make them more efficient? And so that's where AI is starting to make inroads is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the case. Yeah, for sure.
And you know, you even see a lot of these ads online and stuff where they talk about, if you're still just using AI as a ChatGPT, then you're missing the boat, to the point where there's people that have started and run entire businesses just using AI as their staff, if you will. And right. And those are obviously kind of these pilot projects or concept, proof of concept. So is that all, you know, a futuristic dream state, or is AI going to go that far where we're going to be able to rely on, and I know I'm jumping quite a bit ahead here, but it's just a thought that came to me, is where AI is going to be able to grow plants for us. Let's go that far.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that, because that was actually one of the myths versus realities that came up during the conversation that I was listening to was, yeah, I mean, I don't think we'll be at a point where AI is going to be completely growing things for us. I think the question is how can we better use it, and, you know, making sure that we have a good sense of, you know, how can this realistically affect the jobs that we're doing on a day-to-day basis.
And maybe there's some people listening to this saying, well, why couldn't it? Why couldn't we have a robot that plants it and does this and then knows that past history says this? And so maybe in a little bit in the later part of the podcast, we can come back to the liabilities and the risks and the inherent problems that happen in AI today. So you were talking a little bit about the survey and the questions. So people are, they're definitely starting to shift to, I'm not using it today. So there's not a lot more people that are using it, but the openness to using it is definitely increased year over year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that's the case for sure.
So what's the gap between them using it? Why is that not jumping? Is it just that speed of change, or is there a fear, or what are you hearing?
I think it's all of the above. I think one of the biggest questions is just, how do I get started? You know, you hear a term like AI and it's so vast. It can be overwhelming, I think, to really figure out, okay, how can this really benefit what I'm doing? Is the technology kind of way out of my scale? So I think that's where the question starts for this industry, is how do you get started? It was interesting. One of the growers I was talking to at Cultivate, he actually has started an AI club at his company, where, you know, anybody who's interested, whether they're using it or not, they meet on a monthly basis and talk about, you know, how are you using it? How could I be using it? What do I have to do to get started? And I wonder if those similar types of conversations are taking place at other companies as well. I got to think that they are to this point.
Yeah. And so it's really just about, creating that forward looking committee or club or whatever you want to talk about, saying, well, where could we use it that we can start getting used to it, start getting less fear of it, starting to think of how change management could work and things like that in regards to it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, I think, again, it kind of goes back to just getting started and, you know, having some familiarity with what should my ultimate goals and expectations be. So don't set your sights too high on what you think it should be doing. You know, work at a level that is also going to be the best fit for your business as well. You know, depending on how big your company is, you might be able to, you know, scale in a certain way. But if you're not as big, you got to look at how could it still benefit us, you know, to make our company successful and efficient, even if we're not doing something at the scale of what some of the other largest growers in the industry are doing.
Well, to take this right down to the operational level in terms of a podcast, then is so little things like maybe do start introducing a GPT. Like, it doesn't have to be ChatGPT. It could be any of the other ones. There's hordes of them out there now that are very, I don't believe there's yet a horticulture specific one, but there are certain ones that are specific for better. Some are better at writing, some are better at coding, some are better at technical, some are better at math and logic problems and things like that. So taking one of the GPTs that are out there and starting to introduce and asking it questions, maybe that's one way to get people who are somewhat saying, well, where can I start? Maybe that's one place to start, is just start asking a GPT questions.
Yeah. And the good thing is, you can't go wrong. I mean, that's, you can try as many different prompts and approaches as you like. So I think that is a good way to start. And don't just limit yourself to ChatGPT too. There's so many other different tools that are out there. It amazes me that every, you know, month or so you see something new come to the surface. This is something that we should potentially be looking at. So yeah, try it out. And again, there's no wrong way to do it. That's the good thing about all this.
Yeah. So maybe even on that side, just to help some of the listeners, is ChatGPT, of course, is one form of GPT. GPT being just this language model, if you will, large language model that allows it to look at hordes and hordes of past data that exist on the internet and come up with the most likely or the best answer that it has for your question, because someone out there probably has already asked the same question. That's probably the most basic form of AI, where it's just generating past data into new answers. It's not even necessarily, it's generative in some way where it's creating new data, but in the most cases, it's just relying on a lot of old data. So like you said, you can't go wrong. Your plants aren't going to die because you asked the question. And even if it gave you the wrong answer, your plants still won't die because you have to act on it. So there's no, there's a very low risk, other than, you know, if you expose your data to it by giving it a spreadsheet that is, who knows how it will get back into the public sphere. So that's a different conversation. But from just asking questions, there's nothing that can go wrong other than it'll give you a bad answer.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to, too, you know, don't just take what you're getting back with a grain of salt. You have to do the research yourself and figure out if it makes the most sense for what you're doing. I mean, you know, those of us who have done those simple prompts, I've gotten a response back, you know, this doesn't make any sense for me or my company. Why should I be doing this? So, I mean, the growers, the people involved in it have the past experience to be able to realistically say, this makes sense, or no, we're going off in the wrong direction. Maybe I should change the way that I'm approaching this to get an answer that might seem to make the most sense for us.
And using this platform here as a way to help educate and learn and all of those things at the same time, it's kind of the name we have is a play on the word rhizome, which means, you know, new data, new roots, new nodes can pop up at any time. So using the podcast in that way is speaking of, hey, this doesn't make any sense in GPT language or in AI language. Those are called hallucinations or they can be called hallucinations. So regardless of whether your kids are telling you that it does all of their homework for them and it's perfect, or regardless of whether you've never encountered it making a mistake yet, GPT and AI is prone to hallucinating, which is essentially coming up with data that absolutely doesn't make sense and is kind of a short circuit in the AI's brain, if you will. And
yeah,
those do happen, and we have to be aware of that.
Sure, absolutely. You know, this industry is all about trial and error. Trial and error means a lot of different things. This is just one of them. So, and that's the good thing is a lot of growers you talk to, the most innovative ones, they're not afraid of trial and error. So they're going to see if it works. If it doesn't, they're going to come up with a process to make it work for them.
And do you have any growers, or have you heard of any growers that are experimenting? So one thing is this, the large language model, the GPTs that we were just talking about, where they are just perusing through the last 2-3 decades of internet data. And now most GPTs, most ChatGPT, Copilot, Grok, or Claude, you name any of those, you can connect them to your own data. Now you have to make sure there's security and privacy agreements that you're signing, where you can now start questioning your own data. So rather than looking at the internet as the source of its data, you might have 5 grower recipes or 10 years worth of grower data, and you now ask your GPT, hey, what happened when I applied this fertilizer? What happened 3 months later? You can start doing those kind of analysis in a what should I call like in a normal language, just rather than scoring through data and looking for it, you can just ask GPT to score your data for you. You have any people that are using it in that extent? Because I know that's probably only a few months where that's really becoming generally publicly available.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can share any specific examples, but I do know that there's growers that are looking at how they can, you know, go down that road. And I mean, they've gone through the initial stages of, you know, what are some of the tools out there. They're looking at that next step now. What are those steps that I take that, you know, not just look at my historical data, but then how can I start to respond to that? How can I make some really informed decisions? And then I think too, they're also looking at, okay, so now that I have that in front of me, how am I currently set up as an operation, whether it's in the office, whether it's in the greenhouse? And is the technology that I'm using right now aligned with some of this, you know, new data that I have, and how can I put them together? Do I have to make other changes to my business to account for some of that? So I think those are the questions a lot of growers, if they're not going down that road, they're definitely looking at as they look into the future.
Yeah, because that's another low risk, low barrier way of starting to use it. For example, here's just an example. If I take your employee handbook, for example, you may have a lot of different policies and stuff. If you would connect your GPT to those documents, now anybody in the company, rather than looking for an FAQ, which is a predefined set of questions, or you needing to know what section you need to find the vacation policy in, you could literally say, hey, I've taken 3 days off. How many more days do I have left? GPT, the on your data could just say, oh, you have 5 days left. You have 6 days left, rather than you trying to look for it, doing the math and figuring out. And I know that's a very simplistic example, but that's another low barrier way where people can start interfacing with GPT and starting to feel how GPT or AI and data start working together.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, too, that goes into, in this industry, you hear a lot about one of the key concerns that a lot of companies have is, you know, on the talent side, not just finding talent, but also retaining talent. I think something like this could be a tool to help some of that. And as you have, you know, experienced growers at your company moving on to other phases of their careers, that knowledge gap, if you don't have it accounted for, is something that could really have a negative effect on your operation. So using the tools that, you now have to immediately train somebody who's coming new into a role, but then also give them the flexibility to, you know, again, use some of these tools and take things off in their own direction as long as it aligns with what the company is doing. I think that'll be a nice long-term benefit for this industry, you know, as they work on, you know, building the next generation of talent and then keeping them within your company.
Yeah. So obviously keeping the talent is always the number one priority, but if you know, like you said, they move on to a different phase of their career or what have you, that tribal knowledge, you're actually embedding it deeper into the company. So it's not tied to a person, but it's tied to the company.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
That's where AI can really help unleash that, because that's obviously the big concern about, well, the tribal knowledge went with that person. Mm-hmm. If there's some way you can keep it in the company and now the next person doesn't have to take over the tribal knowledge, they just need access to it, which is where AI can come in and give you access to that.
Yeah. And I think half your training is already done at that point too. You've got all the information in front of you. You've got the processes in place. Now take it and run with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And then, so when these growers are answering the questions of, are they using AI, would you imagine they're including things like automatic sticking robots and stuff like that's all qualified as, because inside of those, there's clearly AI at work. Yeah, is that considered automation or is that considered AI?
I'd say that's considered more automation, I think, at least in terms of how our industry looks at it. You know, automation is a field term I think that's been around for a little bit longer. So again, I think it depends on the scale of your company, but you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of growers who will make that first look at something like sticking and cutting machines as automation. But to your point, there's, you know, data within some of those automation tools that you can then start to integrate into what you're doing throughout the rest of the business. So it's a little bit of both, but I do think automation will be the first thing that a grower looks at when they see something like that type of technology.
Yeah, because if you take a sticking machine, for example, you got to take thousands and thousands of pictures of all of these cuttings. Well, that's AI at work interpolating to a degree of accuracy that what it sees in front of it is a cutting that is represented by those thousands of pictures that it's already seen. So
yeah,
in essence, that's AI at work. So if people are going down the road of sticking and cutting and machines and those machines, there's a huge component of AI already built into that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Again, it's taking that next step. It's taking all the data that your machines are collecting and then saying, okay, what can I do based on what I'm seeing here?
Yeah, yeah. So basically, probably as a general rule, then what I'm hearing is yes, there's a lot of hype, but let's not let that hype create fear in terms of, oh, how do I do it? It has to be perfect. It's possible to get started at a really small scale and just play with it rather than it already impacting your business I've lost my crop because of AI. That's the gap between starting and that happening is so large that it's virtually non-existent in terms of, because AI just isn't there yet and no one's going to take it that far.
Yeah. I mean, nobody has to be a super user right away. Start slow, figure out how it's going to, I think the biggest key is figuring out how it's going to be, how it can best benefit your operation. Don't feel like, okay, everybody else is doing this, so it makes sense for us to do it too. Look at how it can realistically benefit your processes and improve efficiency throughout different stages of the operation.
And I guess that goes for the office side where you're asking it to help you create an employee manual, right, to the data growing side where you're asking it for, you know, helping growing better, and also even on the financial side of things, obviously.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to your point about how the different ways that you can look and ultimately define what AI is. I mean, again, there's no wrong way to do it either. So that's the nice thing.
So of the people who are using AI, what is the top, did you go that far into your data of what are they actually using it for?
Unfortunately, we haven't, just because, again, those numbers are kind of low right now. I will say, ask me again in a couple of years, because as we do surveys like our top 100 survey, I'd say from year to year, 75 to 80% of what we ask is going to be about the same. But then we do start asking some of those questions as, you know, a trend emerges or a technology emerges. So I know as we get into next year, we'll definitely be asking that type of question is, okay, so not just are you using AI, but how are you using it? How do you define AI and where do you see its benefits? I think that's something that coming down the line, I think we'll definitely start to ask more of.
Yeah. So in terms of definitions and terms, one of the things, so AI kind of really launched in the last year or two in terms of from a ChatGPT, that's when it really became mainstream. AI was already functioning at various levels prior to that. But that's really when it became popular and everyone started using it in some way, shape or form, or a lot of people did. And there's a lot of questions about, well, where is this going to go? Where is the next step? Is that immediately going to mean a lot of people aren't going to be able to find jobs anymore? And what's really, according to a lot of predictions, which were correct, we've really come into this what's called an agentic AI, which really is just a, you know, a word in terms of it's an AI agent. So what is that? Are you familiar with that? And how does that play? And how should our listeners say, well, if some people are talking about having an AI agent, what does that mean?
I mean, I'll be honest. I don't know if I can best answer that. I mean, I think I don't know if we're quite there yet, you know, at least from some of the folks that I talk to. But again, I think it goes back to that's the next phase of this is how can that best benefit what we're doing? So I hate to deflect that question, but again, it's kind of one of those ask me again in a couple of years where I can probably give you a better answer for
sure. So in its current context, just to kind of bring in where we're seeing it happening on the software side, is in its current process, it's really just a very focused and nuanced process inside of the global AI ecosystem, if you will, where, for example, you may have an agent that is all about supporting your customers. So you just may have your support agent, which is very much like in the early days, when that little thing would pop up on a website and you'd click on it, it was actually a human being in the early days that you could talk to, and it would, or, and if they weren't online, it would send them a WhatsApp or a text message that, and they would get back to you the day after. Then, you know, AI started entering that world, and now they're called chatbots, where the chatbot, and it wasn't even really true AI. It was just algorithmic saying, if you see these three words, then they must be talking about this. Whereas now it's almost conversational, where you can have a conversation where it's like it's ChatGPT that's running inside of that chatbot. So you can almost refer to that as an agent. You may have another agent that is all about, for example, just crop care. So you could, rather than supporting the person in a claims or a return or a credit or how do I find this, now you have another agent that's much more focused on how do I grow my plant? What would, you know, and I've seen some of the growers in the industry have started up their own AI agents, and you can now interface and even download apps that will, you know, take a picture of your plant and it'll tell you what's wrong with the plant and how to help you through it.
Yeah. I think a lot of that goes back to, you know, another challenge that the industry tends to face is communicating with whoever my end consumer is going to be, whether it's the consumer themselves or whether it's the retailer, making things easier on their end so that if they have questions, they can reach out in an efficient way. If you have to communicate something to them, you can do so in an efficient way as well. So I think that's an area where I think this could eventually be a nice tool to help bridge some of that communication, you know, especially if you're in the peak of spring. Obviously, that's where you want to be as efficient as possible when, you know, addressing, you know, a last minute challenge that comes up, and how can my customer get their answers, you know, their questions answered as quickly as possible without having to take us away from what we're doing on a day-to-day basis too.
So just that support, that communication, that dialogue, it's really becoming helpful in that dialogue. And to really dumb it down, it's the information transferring information from one party to another, from one entity to another. That's really where AI seems to be focused on right now. So if you have an issue with my product or you want to know more about my product, I have these agents are then allowing that information to transfer from the customer to the vendor to the customer, if you will.
Yeah. Yep. I think exactly. That's yep.
So as you're, I don't know if you've had a chance to speak to some of the people who are using it. What are some of the, let's maybe talk about some of the risks, the liabilities, the the items we need to worry about or be concerned about or be watching out for when it comes to AI.
Yeah, I think you mentioned earlier about data privacy. I think that's one thing, making sure that you're not in the process of using like a tool like ChatGPT, for example, you know, giving out too much proprietary information. I think educating your team on how AI can work for them and, you know, position it as it's not a job replacement, it's a job enhancer. So, you know, there are things that we're spending a lot of man hours doing. Here's how we can use some of these tools to then take what you're doing, you know, as somebody who's working in the greenhouse and move them into areas that are they can be more efficient in, that are of more interest to them, and automate some of those other processes. Use your team the right way, because I mean, as you know, with today's labor challenges, efficiency is more important than ever right now.
So along that lines, you know, these reams of data and Excel spreadsheets that are sitting there that nobody's doing anything with anyway, mm-hmm. right now, because they just don't have the time. This is a place where AI could, again, of course, with data privacy and all those liabilities, here's a way where you're not replacing anybody's job, but you're becoming a lot better at your job yourself because you're able to access this data now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all want to be more efficient at what we're doing. And there's so many different things that you know, in our day-to-day that we want to, you know, shift off to some sort of an automated tool. I think that's one way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So where, you know, as we move on and not to, I think all technologies come with their risks and liabilities. So we talked about data privacy. That's a really big one. And to the point where I'm not even sure the AI companies have figured out what this data privacy is yet. Like what is public domain? What is private domain? So if I now connect a large language model or a GPT of some sort to my data, where is that getting stored and who actually ultimately gets access to it? I think those are definitely highlighted. Probably the number one point is that's a big concern.
Yeah. Who owns that data, especially once you put it out there? I mean, does it stay as part of, you know, your ownership or how does that work? So yeah, I think that's a question a lot of growers are looking to answer, you know, and that could be a stumbling block in some cases, but that's something that a lot of growers are looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the CEO, Sam Altman, the CEO of ChatGPT, was just on record in recent weeks speaking about that exact thing, that some of the data you're sharing with ChatGPT, it's clearly public domain once it's shared. So that's the agreement you agreed to when you signed up, but who reads those nowadays, right?
That's right.
So go ahead.
No, that's it. I was just agreeing there.
Yeah, like who reads those? And so be aware of what you're doing. The other thing is, yeah, it's not coming for a job. Will they maybe reduce the number of jobs required to do work at the end of the day? Yeah, but every technology in the past has done that. So has the combine. So has the pick. You know, so has the sticker. So has the sorting cameras. You know, all of those technologies, even without AI, have been there to reduce the manual labor that's required.
Yeah. And I think in an industry like this too, I mean, when just finding that labor to begin with can be a challenge. When you find solutions that can automate some of the process, you don't even have to start the process of hiring somebody. You can begin to use those tools right away to automate. And, you know, instead of thinking at the beginning of the year, I have to fill 100 jobs. Now I only have to fill half of that because I have the tools that can, you know, get rid of some of those monotonous duties that I might have to otherwise bring somebody in to do themselves. So.
So rather than looking to replace current positions, look at it as, and I think some companies actually have that policy, before you place an ad, look at what parts of this ad can I do with agents or with AI or with automation, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure this industry is quite used to asking that question already. What can I automate? You know, I have conveyor belts. Well, I've just gotten, or I got, you know, sticking machines, or I have sorting. All of that is coming from the question is, how can I reduce the manual labor in order to automate this? And not even to replace the labor, but to speed it up, make it more consistent, more efficient, which is ultimately what growers are after.
Yeah, exactly. Efficiency is the number one thing right now. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And of course, there's always a cost associated with this. And I think also just as we're going through this AI revolution, if this is what we want to call it, it seems like every AI platform out there wants their $3 or $7 or $10 a month. You know, we've seen it before. How do you see that playing out? Because I think that's a bit of a deer in the headlights as well, as when people are like, well, which one do I go with? And they all want so much dollars a month. Where do they start? Any ideas? Yeah.
I mean, I don't, like, from the folks that I talk to, I think the cost is probably at the lower end of what they're concerned about, only because, you know, look at the price tag for something like this compared to just about anything else that you're going to add to your operation to increase efficiency. I think that's where it goes to, you know, I mentioned the number before. We asked about where are you investing in the coming years in that emerging technology, that's where we classify AI is under the emerging technology bucket. And that number over the past 3 years has increased from, I think it was 15% in 2023, 19% in 2024. In this last year, it's up to 22%. So not huge numbers, but that's a nice little growth path that I think that the price tag for something like this right now is not a big concern from what I've seen from the folks that I talk to.
Okay. So what other considerations in terms of liabilities and risks should they be looking at? Because especially if more and more people are looking to invest in it, naturally they're also going to say, well, how do I secure that investment? So we've talked about the data privacy. We've also, of course, talked about, well, start low barrier so there is no risk. But is there anything else that's coming across your radar that they should be looking out for?
No, I think we've kind of covered most of those immediate concerns. I think it's just, it kind of goes back to the beginning of the conversation where it's, let's get started. I think that's just, it's the biggest stumbling block is, this is so broad of a concept. What can I really do? So where do I get started? And I think a lot of that goes to finding somebody who's started to use it and just ask questions. I mean, that's a good thing about this industry is there's very few companies and people that, you know, aren't willing to share the type of information. So that's, and that was one of the points that one of the panelists made at the discussion of Cultivate that I was at, was ask questions. Don't be afraid to talk within your company. Don't be afraid to talk to other growers about what they're doing. That's the best way to learn something like this, I think.
Yeah. And that's very inherent in this industry already. Right. That's, I've mentioned many times on the podcast, is how collaborative and team oriented and group oriented the industry is, much more so than I don't know, the construction industry, for example. It's I speak from lived experience that's the case, because it was quite a shock and an eye opener. And so absolutely, I didn't even really think about that. Is these clubs or committees don't even have to be within your own company. Maybe start one across your geographical region or wherever, and start asking these questions. How is it? Where are you using it? And what's coming on?
I mean, you know, the growers make a habit of meeting, you know, a couple times a year. They'll meet at somebody's greenhouse and they'll do a tour and they'll talk through some different things. This should just be part of that conversation, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's quite common on LinkedIn and everything to see, you know, another grower tour. And, you know, how often do you see that in, and I can speak from that because I followed that industry as well. We typically didn't tour each other's construction companies because there was just, you know, this is the way we do it. And if you learn how we do it, well, now you're competitive with us and that doesn't work.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's the nice thing about this industry.
Yeah. In this industry, that's pretty much non-existent. Another thing to note out is there's a lot of technologies, and I've been interviewing some of those on the podcast, such as, you know, autonomous vehicles. I've Burrow or drones. I've talked to Putz drones and Corvus drones. All of those technologies are inherently, it's in their best interest to be as efficient and as accurate and as best and as data oriented as possible. So inherent in that, a lot of our growers are going to be having AI technologies in their greenhouses without even specifically targeting AI, as just because you bring in a sticking machine or you bring in this drone or an automated autonomous vehicle, you've just bought AI. You've just bought something that has brought AI into your organization.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily the way that you always think of it, but like in my mind, if it's collecting data and if it can help you make a decision, that's part of the process. So yeah, so whether it's a sticky machine, whether it's you know, something that's going to move plants around the greenhouse, for example, that's all part of it, I think.
Yeah. So we're really at this place now, and like you said, ask us again, so we may have to make this a recurring conversation. We're at this place right now where, AI really got, we really got bombarded with AI as this tool that you can ask anything and it gives you the answers. And, you know, kids are using it to write their essays and it's doing all of this work. Now we're really coming to a place where it's this tool, this technology can work on your data and help you make your own data come alive. So where do you, any ideas where you see it going next in terms of, because we said, well, what's, if it isn't going to grow for us in the near future, I'm sure you're talking to some of the other technology sites as well. What's the next frontier after this, after it's done gleaning all of our data?
Yeah, I think it's just the increased adoption. I think, you know, there's so many growers that, with a few exceptions for certainly, that want to see how a new technology or a new automation system or new AI or whatever can play out with somebody. They want to see a case study first. They want to see it's going to work well for you, and then I'll look at it to see how it works well for me. I think you have to have some of these operations, you know, step into that early adopter role, try some things that are new to them, and then, you know, going back to what we just talked about, being willing to share that information with others who want to get into it. I think that's going to be the next step in this is, you know, just adopt as much as you can and learn from what others are doing.
Yeah. So it's not like we have the definitive answer here of this is what you do for AI. This is a really evolving conversation. And I know that's probably inherent in what we've been talking about, but I just wanted to spell it out. This is an evolving conversation, very much like the technology, and just go along with it. And like you said, I love that you mentioned that there needs to be a case study. There needs to be proof. Well, isn't that definitely true for this industry? Is somebody needs to be that adopter. And then, because everybody's trying things all the time, and it'll take somebody who has the bandwidth to take on that kind of a project, because everybody does have a lot of trial projects going on. And this industry definitely isn't afraid of trying new things, but there's got to be some proof it actually works once it starts getting more mainstream adopted.
Yeah, I think that's the key point is, I mean, growers love to hear from other growers. So if somebody else can say, I did it, it works. And maybe even more importantly, here's maybe what didn't work in the initial process. Here's what we learned from that. Here's how we overcame it. Here's maybe what you can do as well, too, so you don't have to make the same mistake that we did initially.
Yeah. So in all of that we've been talking about, we kind of covered the, you know, what is the data saying out there? How many growers are using it? Where is it getting used? Where can growers start? Some of the liabilities and risks, and I'm sure there's many more things we can cover, but there's also a lot of unknowns. So is there any items that you wanted to bring forward that I maybe haven't touched on just yet, or?
No, I think we've covered most of it. I mean, again, it's something that we're trying to track, I think, as much as you are. So part of our next steps as we work with our audience, and again, we kind of segment out the top 100 from, I'll say, the industry as a whole, because you see the top 100, you know, a little more advanced in how they're adopting different types of technology. In a lot of cases, you know, what they're doing, the industry as a whole can start to learn from. So as we move forward, I think we're going to start to ask a lot more of those types of questions. And, you know, how we talked about earlier, not just are you using AI, but what are the tools you're using? How are you using it? How do you define it? And then where do you see that it can ultimately benefit you, your company, and I think the industry as a whole as well?
So as you move forward, your questioning and your surveys and stuff are going to get tighter and tighter in terms of where exactly. And I would imagine just like your numbers of people who are interested is rising, that's going to eventually spill over into people who have taken the leap and started to use it. And the data will just grow from there is what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think those are the types of stories that we want to try and tell as well. I mean, I don't want to exclude us from the conversation. When we hear about somebody doing something well, we're going to do what we can to provide those insights and those lessons to others in the industry at the same time. So that, you know, growers of all sizes can really start to learn from some of their peers on how this might work best for them.
Just to, as you were talking there, I had to think, how is it changing the way you do your work today, AI? You're in journalism, you're writing all the time. That's probably one of the big things that AI is being touted for, of of doing, and yet there was a big push saying, well, is it doing it well?
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, you know, as writers, I think we look at it, we work with a lot of outside contributors. So we've started to be able to sense, okay, this was, you could clearly tell something was written using ChatGPT. And then, not to say there's anything wrong with that, but I think, you know, for example, we send out, you know, newsletters over the course of the week. We're always looking to improve our own SEO for our website. So using tools that can help us write better headlines and better story decks and that sort of thing. I think that's how we're starting to use it a little bit. I think going back to the survey for a second, you know, we're just scratching the surface of that, I think. You know, we ask, you know, again, going back to our top 100 survey, 80 to 90 questions. Some of what, you know, it only takes a few minutes to fill out, but there's all that data. And then we look at it ourselves and say, okay, what can we do just, you know, beyond just reporting the numbers? If we look at 5 years worth of data on this question and this question, what story can we ultimately tell based on that? And using something like a ChatGPT or something similar to help us take all the information and put it out in a way that, you know, this makes sense for, you know, here's a trend, here's what we're seeing, and here's how this could benefit what somebody else is doing.
Yeah. So really not replacing your writing, but augmenting what you're doing and allowing you to be better and enhancing that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the case, I think.
Because I can definitely relate where you get a document from someone like, hey, we want to look at this concept, and you read it and you're like, well, have you even read this? Because I don't know. I'm not sure you wrote it.
Yeah.
And so our conversations are going to be better when we use AI properly. Because what's the point of having a conversation if not everyone in the room is critically informed of what we're actually trying to do, right?
Yeah. And it goes back to just don't take what you're given, read through it, review it, make sure that it makes sense, because it's not always going to make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely take that, you know, walk, crawl, walk, run approach. And I'm always interested, especially from a psychological perspective, how that's going to happen for the next generation, because they may not have the basis of not having an AI in their world to having one. So are they going to develop the same critical thinking? But that's a whole other topic on a different note.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, that's been great, Brian. I think we'll wrap it up there. We just kind of use this as a primer into the AI world. Where are we at today? And I'd love this to become an ongoing conversation, especially you're using, you know, you're constantly looking through the organ or the industry, I should say, what data is out there, what are we doing? And I think all of us collectively just get better because of it. So,
yeah. And I'd be happy to keep this conversation going.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sure.